Welcome to What the Hacks, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 minutes. My name's Davey, your host, and with me today I've got Aaron and Phil. How are you doing, guys?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. Phil, what's up?
Not much. Just furiously painting away at these models for the tournament.
And how is that furious painting going?
They're all primed.
So much fury.
Right. I like to picture you furiously priming them, just real angry about it.
Well, I did have to hand prime them all this morning because it's gross. Definitely too cold outside to go and spray.
No, man, it's not. It's there's tricks, although it's scary, I guess, if you're if they're models that you absolutely have to get done. But I will I read and have done a number of times, you keep the models and the spray paint warm, bring them out, spray them real quick while they're all still before they're cooled off. And I think I've spray painted down to like 20 degrees, something like that, without difficulty. So, but yeah, it's scary. I get it. Hand priming, it's a safer play. Sounds like a real Zinchian move. All right. Well, so this episode we're going to cover what our lists were bringing to WAPACA's little Underworlds tournament. Whether or not, I think they didn't quite get enough folks to get support to call it a Grand Clash, but I might be wrong about that. But Joe Pecoraro is running it, much thanks to him. And we're going to cover the list that we picked and kind of the process in developing and picking a list for an event. So you get three different perspectives. And then in a couple weeks from hearing this, you're going to get the aftermath, how it turned out. So we are going to cover why we picked our faction, overall strategy, some of the rundown. And then once that's all done, we'll hit all our expectations and hopes. So first up on the chopping block, Aaron, let's talk about your sure shot number one winner that you're bringing here. What faction did you pick?
See, actually, I decided not to go with my sure shot number one winner, and I defaulted actually back to Skaven instead. So I'm keeping my secrets close to my vest. No one's going to find out.
Right? Because you die with those secrets. Why would you share?
Yeah, of course. Right? Straight to my grave. Now I'm going to be playing, what are they called? The Swarm? Scritches? Swarm?
Spyclaw Swarm? Tell
Spyclaw
me why.
Swarm, that's what it is.
Why those guys?
Because I love them. Mainly because I don't ever want to make an AOS army out of that, out of the Skaven, because there's so many of them. So I figured this the only way I was ever going to get a taste of Skaven is if I could do it in sort of a small scale. So I've sort of molded my expectations around the army that I've picked because I wanted to paint them. It turns out that my playstyle sort of suits them. I'm more of a sneaky avoidance type player to begin with, and so who better to play than the Skaven? I'm looking to do the classic objective based Skaven deck because I feel like they're pretty well suited to it. Maybe even more so than anybody else out there.
So specifically, hold objective style is what you're going with.
Hold objective style, but hey. Yeah. You don't know which ones I'm going to have, though.
That's true.
Maybe I don't have all of them.
And I should say, you have experimented with a number of playing styles just in the few games that we've played. That's been kind of a fun thing. I think Skaven will bring that where they're good at hold objective, but there's also builds that have Scritch being a powerhouse killer.
Yeah, exactly. So. Problem being is that, both of those builds do sort of rely on Scritch surviving. And so regardless of how I'm playing, whoever I'm playing is probably still going to have a target on Scritch's back. So regardless, I'm going to have to get real creative in terms of keeping him alive. And
plus those strategies, you have to roll dice. So, gross.
Gross. Yeah. I mean, this game would be a perfect game if there just wasn't dice involved. Keep that in mind. No. In terms of how I structured the list, I think there's if you look online, the different databases of different decks, you see that folks do, or at least some of the recent winners have been sort of a combo or a melding of objectives, but then also a fair bit of lethality or offensive power. I'm foregoing all that offensive power. I have no interest. I wasn't just kidding. I have no interest in rolling dice, and instead I'm really going all in on the objective side of things. It's no doubt a worse deck. I'm sure it is, but it's still how I wanted to approach it.
So I like that decision. It's I don't know if rogue is the term, but I think I played against one deck you'd built similar to this, and I don't I haven't looked at your full list or anything like that, but that you
and
know
you never
of.
Will.
Yeah. but I remember playing against you, and this is back before Abandoned Restricted, and I had my turn in there, and you never swung at me, so I was like, oh, I guess this super awesome card, my turn, is just a dead card in my hand because you're not going to take a punch.
Sure.
Not going to take a swing. So
not uncommon for folks to have, you know, defensive cards. I mean, I think people typically and err on the side of offensive, but still there are defensive cards that will never come into play when you're playing me. It's all real movement based and, you know, placement and location, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. So when you were building this, did you have any hard decisions? You felt like, oh man, like, am I going to take this or this, or what was the real choke points in when you were writing it, or did it just kind of flow together?
The hardest part was making sure that I spelled the word objective when I was searching for cards in the card database, and then just going down the line of yes, 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 yes. If it's got the word objective in it, I want it. No, that's not true. Because I can spell objective, no problem. The hardest part was sort of dealing with the keys, because that's a component that some folks do or do not include in their objective decks. Two glory, obviously, is better than no glory or even one glory, but it's hard to sort of ensure that those keys are turned on when you need them, that they're not dead cards in your hand like me and Phil were talking about. So they're sort of a balancing act, and then in addition sort of balancing between the objective base keys and then those other keys that are just either always on or general in terms of if you're just going to hold any objective or the model just has to be surviving. So whether or not you want to go all in on those two glory keys versus the single glory. So I tried to strike a balance somewhere in between. I'll probably be kicking myself in the middle of the games when I have just a grip full of keys at the beginning of, you know, any given match. But that's future Aaron's problem, and today's Aaron doesn't care one bit. But beyond that, there's still some tweaks. I don't have to turn my list until tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, so much time.
I know. I'm getting a little trigger shy, I guess, in terms of maybe I don't want to be as all in on the objective side of things as I am currently. So we'll see where I end up. I'll sleep on it.
Well, talk to me about the objective, because we talk about defining your deck by how it's going to score its glory, and knowing in general that that you are going for hold objective style. There's a few ways to do this, right? There's the, like, grab everything. What is it? Overextended? This is the generic one. Yep. Where you hold all five.
Oh, yeah.
Or hold everything in enemy territory or something like that. Or were you going for the high scores, like the combos, tactical genius, tactical supremacy, or
I tried to go middle of the road. The ones that are, you know, big bang for your buck. Anyway, so like both middle and easy ones, I guess I would say, because my objective is not only to get these objectives. It's weird we're sort of using this objective term like interchangeably, but
that's a problem with the game. I've kind of bothers me that they use that same word on both those. But yeah, go on.
I am surprised they didn't think about it. Yeah, or maybe they didn't care. So easy to middle difficulty ones, but. Additionally, I guess my perspective is, and we'll see how it plays out, is half the battle is not just getting my objectives, but just sort of ensure that someone else doesn't get theirs. And that's kind of where like the movement and the being sort of cagey about it comes into play. Sure. So that like I'm not necessarily gunning for those high scores if I know that I can keep you from scoring yours. I just need to be a little bit ahead of you, you know, the general you. Right. At least that's the way I look at it. Now, of course, that's going to come back and bite me in the butt, but still, that's how I'm approaching it.
I think, and I don't know if you have the ploys and upgrades to do this, but Glory Starvation is a pretty powerful, I mean, it's what defensive decks often make a lot of money out of, is that they're not scoring high, but they're making sure the other guy doesn't score much at all. So if you can do that, then you don't have to have that huge scoring objective set. So
yeah, exactly. So that's the way I'm looking at it. Let's see if it actually plays out.
Have you, and I should ask this, I know the answer, but the listener doesn't, what kind of experiences have you had with this prototype so far?
I've played you once or twice, and just some variations on this deck. Sure. By no means is it the exact same. I think I've spent some time just culling cards that have the word objective on them, but still do not fit the list as I have envisioned it. Right. I think I might have played Philip like once a long time ago, but not recently.
But I mean, to be fair, so it's not like it's not a play experience, not a level of play experience where you say like, oh, I'm really fine tuning this thing down to, you know, a razor edge. But you are at least at this stage where you're like, yeah, I have confirmed that I do enjoy this play style, and, you know, it should make for an enjoyable tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess one of the things I'm looking forward to is seeing a variety of like opponents or other lists. Yeah. To see, like, well, I know there's that, and I don't mean nothing by that, but just generally to see how different warbands in different decks can tackle my list. That's half the fun, is seeing how other armies
how many ways can I lose? Yeah,
well, not the other step, but how they can, what tools they have to chase down a list like this.
Sure. All right, we'll get into some of the specific event expectations and such, but Phil, talk to us. What faction are you bringing to Huapeka?
I am bringing the Eyes of the Nine, so getting tricksy with Tzeentch.
All right, and why? What brought you to picking Eyes of the Nine?
Well, so my sort of funny counterpoint to why Aaron is playing the list that he's playing, my main list for AOS for the longest time was Tzeentch. And when this game came out, I really wanted to play Tzeentch, but they didn't have Tzeentch, so I played Garrix Reavers instead.
Mm. Like a real man.
But now there's Tzeentch, so they were just sort of like, well, I've got to play them now. They're my guys. And so I sort of picked them just out of habit, I guess, and now I'm trying to figure out how to make them work.
Yeah, and I think you're getting there. all right, so they're a weird warband, right? Like, that's what we've been finding playing with them. What general overall strategy do you think you're taking with these boys, these change boys?
The sort of main strategy is objectives, but close to half of my objective deck is fairly passive, kind of going a defensive build alongside scoring objectives, which saying it sounds weird, but it works. So I'm just going to roll with it. So I guess those other cards are more of an insurance policy on the, you know, off chance that I can't get to objectives, at least I've got this stuff that I can score by just playing the game anyway.
So what is it about the eyes that makes you think like, hey, this is, you know, because Skaven, they kind of present themselves like, I got the speed, I got the numbers, I can grab stuff. What about the eyes makes you think like, this is a warband that can grab objectives and play that game, grab the tokens?
So they're pretty fast. The majority of them have 4 speed to start, so they can get across the board. Having 4 fighters, they don't seem like a large enough warband, but the Blue Horror sort of throws a wrench in things because you get an additional fighter that you can bring in whenever you want, and you can bring them in on any starting hex, so there's that flexibility of putting them anywhere you need them, which means you can kind of use them to counterplay a little bit, which means it's a lot harder to wall off the board, which I feel is usually the kind of tactic that you use to counter objectives, is that you try and outmaneuver your opponent to be like, well, I know you need to get to this back objective, so I'm just going to put a bunch of guys around it, and then you can't get through me, either because I'm going to kill you as you try to move past me, or I'm going to just literally wall you off. And that becomes a lot harder to do when you've got that fighter that you can just put back there.
Yeah, not just that, but a fighter that's going to take at least 2 actions to remove,
right?
Slash score any glory off of. So
definitely. And that's, you know, another sort of fun thing with these guys is that just the individual fighters, the way they work is different than anybody else. The Horror especially is weird, but having range on almost all your guys, but then also having the Zangor in there who can hit like a truck. It sort of gives you this weird sort of mix of like, okay, you've got this heavy melee hitter and these light ranged hitters and a spellcaster. Yeah. And it's like, well, what are they trying to do? And I think I've seen from other lists online that they're pretty flexible because people are playing them in a number of different ways. And I don't know that there's any one correct choice, which is great because then people see them and be like, well, I don't even know what to expect here.
No idea what's going on here. Feels like neither do I. Yeah.
Very Zinchian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Good point. All right. So we got kind of a rough rundown of the strategy. What were your hard choices like as you were refining this build? What did you really struggle with?
So I'm playing a lot of movement ploys, both moving fighters and moving objectives. And there's so many good ones that it's hard to make cuts. And so I actually ended up just leaving the power deck at 22 cards instead of paring it down to 20, which may come back to bite me when I can't draw the cards I need when I need them. But it doesn't feel like a horribly bad plan because a lot of the cards do a lot of the same things as each other. There's contingency plans sort of built in there. And I think knowing that, then going to the upgrades, it was actually a little easier because it was sort of like, well, I know I already want 11 ploys, so it gives me a little more wiggle room with upgrades.
It's always the way, right? It's never like, ah, oh, these 11 upgrades I gotta have. Oh, I guess I get a free ploy. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. All right. So we've actually played a fair number of Eyes of the Nine games. I mean, fair number for us, not for, you know, other folks maybe, but how do you feel like the overall plan developed based on those experiences?
It definitely did not start here. My initial thought going into it was being that there's Zinch, that magic would sort of be the way to go with them. And then I just sort of sprinkled objectives in because the two cultist fighters are kind of garbage for anything else other than to sit around and just muck up the works. And that did not work particularly well because I found that by including a bunch of spells, all of a sudden Vortemis is this huge linchpin that if he dies early, your whole deck just falls apart because half of it is now useless. So I started leaning a little bit more into the objective stuff and found some ways to build on that. And once I started to see that scoring, you know, tactical supremacy or supremacy isn't as hard as it sometimes feels when you have that kind of ace in the hole with the blue horror, that I decided to just sort of lean into that and go really hard into the weird movement shenanigans.
Yeah, and I can say from playing against it, like those are the most mind-bending cards. Like if I look over and see you got a full hand of five power cards, like, man, I planning is really hard here. Like I do not know what I can expect, and particularly with some of those movement ploys or that the eyes can bring with the swapping or Deceitful Step?
There's Deceitful Step and Bound by Fate. Those are the two from the eyes.
Those are rough. And having those on top of like some already pretty powerful push ploys, it can rapidly change the game state on the board. So that's been pretty fun to play against. But all right. Well, looking forward to the Eyes of the Nine if they can get painted.
Promise they will get painted.
All right. All right. Well, that leaves me. I am bringing Garrick's Reavers this year. I picked them a little bit because for some symmetry. I took them last year to Wapaka's Underworlds tournament. At the time, I think it was only one of four warbands possible. I took a sort of hybrid build. I thought it'd be cool to bring them with all these additional cards out now just to see what. Also, it feels like people are a little bit all over the place on how powerful they are or aren't. we talked about in previous episodes, how some folks have rated them highly, and most folks have not. They've said they're close to the bottom tier. Jamie Giblin's blog, Cataphrane Relic, he's put them in the fourth tier, but to be fair, he has said that you can definitely win with these guys. It's just a little bit harder. So even if I somehow do well with them, it's not like I'm going to, oh man, I just proved all the haters wrong. It's, you know, the difference between the top and the bottom is not that huge. But I thought it was just interesting. They're in a cool spot. And I've been playing with Zarbag's Gits for a while, and they're very different. You know, the Gits, I'd get a headache from, like, okay, let's see. I'm not really going to kill much, but if I walk a guy this way and run these two in circles and, like, back these ones off, then I can score these, you know, different objectives that don't really interact with my opponent this much. And with the Reavers, I find again and again, it's like, okay, I'm gonna bring everything down to this one attack here, and it needs to, like, if this one attack succeeds, then it's going to cascade into like five glory for me. And if it fails, then I'm probably out of the game. And that is a very like pulse pounding way to play, at least when you're rattling those dice around in your hand. So
that sounds awful.
You spend a lot of time on riverboats, Davey.
I did just come back from St. Louis area. So, I forgot how wild that is. And with that in mind, I looked at Reavers and looked at this playstyle is going to be hinging on dice rolls. And one thing Reavers have, native in faction is, and with other cards they can bring, is a way to mitigate some of that. You've got, Blood Offering to give you an extra two dice, and you can bring the Potion of Rage, which is universal, but both those give you two extra dice. So I'm bringing things to boost the dice rolls up and then bring the damage up. So it was mostly about movement and accuracy and damage, which feels like it's covering all the categories, but I've more or less given up on survival, which is fine because I'm Reavers and you get rewarded for that a little bit. But I feel like the difficult choices there for me, it's been, I get to the end, you know, I managed to get to 22, and I'd had in there Rising to the Challenge. It's an upgrade that gives you, if you have it on a fighter and your leader goes out of action, then the fighter that the upgrade's on gets an extra dice on all attack actions and an extra wound. And I was like, you know, Garrick dies a fair amount, but it's so often a dead card, and I have such a hard time controlling who dies and when. And it's weird giving up your leader, because all of a sudden you accidentally gave up Victorious Duel or something like that. And that was, so that was a cut. It got all the way down to 20, but then it was this problem of the five restricted, right? Like I was rotating through, like, do I get rid of Illusory Fighter in favor of Twist the Knife? And, I've had a real hard time struggling back and forth with that, where my restricted spots were coming from, which is probably why that list exists. So,
by design.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say play experience has told me that Rising of the Challenge had to go, even though it really fit the archetype of adding extra dice and making sure I land the hits that I bring. The problem was that I played against a ton against Eyes of the Nine, because you play them, and so does Jeff Lawrence, and all. I was like, I have a good feel for how I'll do against Eyes of Nine, and there's a good chance that Phil will be the only one there. You know, who knows? But it's not going to be as saturated. So the other difficult thing has been trying to think about some of the play styles that have not gotten the chance to play against, like, you know, something that's hyper defensive, or high wounds and high defense. And so figuring out how much to add in to counter those play styles for which I haven't had much practice or reps against has been difficult. So I think I had left out a lot of the twist, trap the knife, twist the knife, trap, that sort of thing, because like, oh, I'm doing plenty of damage. Well, yeah, of course you are if you're killing, you know, Narvia and Turash, you know. But
I think you can do 2 damage, yeah.
Yeah, right. So that's been the challenge there. But settle on something, about to submit it. I guess, well, the only other thing I would say is with the movement ploys, I've actually struggled with picking distraction or sidestep, and that kind of harkens back to our episode about push ploys. So I have some that score me for standing on objectives, but most of the deck is scored on killing folks. So sidestep is going to help me score the stuff that I have as far as standing on some objectives, but distraction can help pull them forward and then help starve. We were talking earlier about starving your opponent of glory, and I think seeing more, or potentially seeing more hold objective style lists, that one distraction rises a little bit in value. So it's going to be like a close my eyes and throw a dart thing and then hit submit, but we'll see where we go from there. But that's our 3 lists. Let's talk about expectations. Aaron, what would you like to get out of the event? Where do you think you're going to place, or where would you hope? And then we already talked about some of the things that you're interested in seeing, but anything else to add there?
I don't expect I will rank very highly, which is fine. I'm not going to place high in any real way. I don't want to put it this way because it sounds very trollish, but like, I don't know, I just hate to like, or I want to just sort of run around and like avoid other people's like fights basically. And I don't mean to be frustrating, but like I want to encourage folks to look at their lists in a different way and realize that it doesn't always boil down to just, you know, duking it out, you know, in the middle of the map. There's other ways to play, and by no means am I the only one who approaches it this way, but I still want to encourage that sort of play style or that approach to the game. So that's generally my goal there. But you know, I don't think it's probably going to do well for me. There's always going to be people who's, regardless of I guess their approach, like their dice are going to run hot and they're just going to slaughter my warband. There's nothing really I want to be able to do about it. So I'm prepared for that mentally and emotionally.
I do like the idea of like almost keeping people honest, right? Like the presence of those lists means that you either have to get lucky to avoid them or you have to be prepared to face like a broad variety, right? So
yeah, exactly.
I think in principle, I think it hews well to your idea of how a game like this should be. So I appreciate what you're trying to do, Aaron.
Thank you. At least someone does.
It's kind of like in major AOS tournaments, or 40K even, but I don't follow 40K as closely, where you have to know what the hard counter to your list is because it can sink getting to the top table. Like that just one matchup could mean you're done if you didn't plan for it because it's just so good against your list. And I kind of like having, because those lists tend not to win across the board. Those tend to be lists that are designed to be an upset on certain matches. And I kind of like that there's some of that out there for this game too, where it's like, you've got to know that there's this possibility that if you're across the table from that list, you're just done.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to come at it from like a spoiler perspective, but like if and this is maybe putting too much importance on me and my game, but like
impossible.
Well, thank you. If it means that like I can assure like the best list makes it to the top, the most well-rounded, or you know, the I don't know how else to put it, but if I can encourage that, then like I think it's a mission successful.
You're a crucial part of the montage for the eventual victor. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Phil, what are you hoping to get out of it? What are you interested to see? What kind of expectations do you have?
Well, in terms of expectations, I'm really not sure. I'd like to maybe be at least in the top 50%. That'd feel good. And I feel like I've had enough time with the list that it doesn't feel outside of the possibility. But at the same time, the number of types of lists I've gone up against is not huge. So it's going to be interesting to see how my deck stacks up against a broader variety. And I think that's one thing I'm really looking forward to, is just getting to play a bunch of games against a bunch of different warbands that I wouldn't normally get to play against. And just seeing how the nine does, because I just don't think they've been used enough yet for people to really have a good solid grasp on them. And seeing that come out a little bit more, I think will be good for both my own enjoyment of them and for other people's understanding of them.
Sure. All right. Well, for myself, I would say last year I made it into the top four by virtue of some good dice rolls, some favorable matchups, and just, you know, being kind of... I drew Sepulchral Guard twice with Reavers, and, and had, I think I had Grizzly Trophy in there, so I was really running around with Garrick on some of the games. So
listen to that modesty.
Well, no, I mean, it's not... I am Midwestern here at this point, but I think that's an accurate assessment. I was genuinely surprised to have landed where I was. That being said, I'm feeling like that's my reach goal, is like end up somewhere in the top four. And then I'd be kind of bummed if I didn't get the top half. I'd like to do that. So those are my setting false modesty aside. Those are the two goals I'd like to get. And then same as you guys, I'm really looking forward to seeing something other than Phil's freaking Eyes of the Nine again. So, speaking of that, not that we're gonna have a ton of games in between, but we should bring some of the other archetypes, like a defensive Stormcast or something like that, and let us, you know, try it out against each other or something like that. Just to get some reps on that. But I don't know that we realistically have the time for that. But we'll see. Wish we did, but yeah. But I'm looking forward to getting a whole bunch of games. And I would say for you guys, I don't know that you've played in this environment before, but playing a best of three in 90 minutes is kind of moving along at a pretty good clip. So be ready for that. That about covers it. Looking forward to seeing. There's a number of the people playing in there that I know from playing Age of Sigmar. So looking forward to hanging out with them. It is kind of late at night, so that adds a interesting element. Last year I got there way, way, way too early, and then to pass the time was drinking a lot of beer. And so between being tired and having a lot of beers in me, I was not the least sloppy player out there, to put the double negative out there. So anyway.
Speaking of last year, do you remember how many folks there were playing last year?
I feel like it was 20-something, like... but there was a number that was, it was like there were, because it came together kind of not last minute, but relatively late in it. I think there were maybe 28 people signed up, and then a bunch of people were like, "What? This is ridiculous! Like, why am I going to play starting at 8 p.m.?" So hopefully we don't end up with the same situation this year, and we stick pretty close to our initial numbers. But yeah, I think we were low 20s to give you the shorter answer.
Cool.
Anything else anyone wants to throw out there about Huapeca 2019?
If anybody listening is going to be there, come say hey.
Oh, yeah, totally. Drop us
definitely
a line. And forget everything, all the sweet, sweet tech that you heard about our decks. So.
Well, actually, I'm not even playing Skaven. I'm playing something else entirely.
Yeah, gotcha.
Whole episode was a ruse.
It's the most Skaven thing in the world.
Sure. Plus, I'm going to have a bunch of, just so anybody cares, I'm going to have a bunch of like duplicate promos if everybody wants to do some sweet trading, like,
ooh,
like magic cards.
Yeah. promos.
The only reason I played the game.
No, I believe it.
Got to catch them all.
Yeah, that is on going to be on Aaron's tombstone.
All right. And also the cause of my death.
So appropriate. We're going to get back together after the fact. It should be 2 weeks after you hear this podcast, our next episode is going to be us discussing how well we lived up to our expectations. What
quote
we
unquote well.
Yeah. Slash. Is Davey still sobbing about coming in 16 out of 17? We'll give a quick rundown. It won't be a brutal blow by blow, or maybe it will be. We'll see how much one of us wants to revel in our own glory. And maybe we'll have some sort of informal bragging rights for somebody. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, it's at WTHcast on Twitter, whatthehexcast@gmail.com. You can get Aaron at
Dos Asos.
And again, we're kind of part of the Mortal Realms Network. It's a concept that we're sort of establishing as the mothership podcast branches out in a few directions, but you should check out our main gig. I want to say thanks again for listening, and for What the Hex, I've been Davey.
I'm Phil.
I'm Aaron.
That Aaron, so hot right now.
So hot right now. And final
pretty
thought.
Pretty much why I listen.
For What the Hex Cast, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And this is Aaron.
And what you later? Nope, didn't work.
You had to go and ruin it.
Yeah. Awesome. Glad I've got the power to edit.
Or we just keep rolling with it and wait for people to be like, how come you keep saying in under 30 minutes? And these are all over 30 minutes.
And you know what? Well, yeah, maybe I should. And like, time means nothing in the mirrored city can be.
I just was editing our Chase Bar episode and like, we talk about that.
Yeah. Well, it was under 30 minutes when we recorded it. I don't know how it got any longer.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, and it was just the two of us. I don't know where that third guy came from.